You're listening to your good news station, WCNO Palm City.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Hello, friends. This is Mindy Molina, and you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show here on WCNO 89.9 FM. Thank you for tuning in. I'm here every Wednesday from 4 to 5 talking about all kinds of different stuff. I try to get a lot of different topics in, but they're always financially related. So any way that I can enhance your financial situation with knowledge and empower you to do better or to make wiser, more educated decisions for yourself, that's what I aim to do. And all wrapped into the love of Christ and our fellowship together as we talk for an hour. I ramble on about information that I hope will benefit you and fall on the ears of those who need to hear it. So today, I'm going to be talking about Roth conversions. Last week, we talked a lot about all the different strategies that when people have big IRAs, actually, why don't I even say big, little IRAs. I have people that come to me with the exact same problem, but with various amounts of money. But at the end of the day, it's the exact same amount. Or the problem is the exact same, irrelevant of the amount of money you have in your 401k or an IRA. The issue is what do I do about taxes? And sometimes required minimum distributions of how do we strategize and avoid this big tax lien that is on your retirement account, because Uncle Sam wants to be paid. So I have not figured out a way of not paying it. Obviously, you can leave it and let your beneficiaries or your heirs, your children or your spouse or whoever else deal with the problem, but the problem will eventually have to be resolved and the bill has to be paid in the form of tax. So how do we pay it? If we know we have to pay the tax, how can we strategize to not pay one more extra penny in taxes that we are not required to pay? That's our objective. That's why we plan. That's why I put a lot of thought and effort into creating a strategy for my clients that does give them the path of least tax. That's the goal. So let's talk about taxes first. Before we talk about Roth and what the limitations are with a Roth conversion, and what a Roth conversion is when you have your regular IRA or your 401k. Once you retire or leave the company, your 401k becomes an IRA. And basically, it's an individual retirement account. And at the end of the day, it all means that you still owe income tax on that money. You've never paid your income taxes. They have allowed you to defer the income taxes that you owe until retirement or until you're required to take distributions from it in your 70s or until you need to take distributions from it. So what a Roth is a type of IRA where it's tax-free. You've already paid the income tax. You have to pay the income tax on the money before it can become a Roth. Okay, so the income taxes are paid. Now you put it in a Roth IRA, and a Roth IRA is even free of capital gains tax. So that's why the real tax savings there is because of capital gains. So if you can convert your IRA money at the lowest tax rate, so you pay your taxes on it at the lowest rate possible, and then deposit that money into a Roth IRA, then all as it accumulates from here on out, there'll never be any taxes owed on that money, which is a huge win. But there are certain limitations as to how or when you can do that, obviously, because the government wants you to be in things that are taxable. So they're going to put a little limit on your Roth. So let's talk about taxes, though, because the only reason that we defer taxes in the first place, people fund their 401ks, defer the taxation. So if you're in a low income paying job and you're in a lower tax bracket, it's probably better for you to go ahead and put the money into a Roth, max out your Roth, and then do your 401k. If you're in a really high tax, if you're in a higher tax bracket, you might want to defer the income tax because you're going to have to pay it at the highest rate possible, and you defer it until you get to retirement because it is assumed that your income level is going to be much lower, and you'll pay the taxes on those distributions at a lower tax rate. So my thing is, if you can pay it sooner at a lower tax rate and get it into a Roth IRA and let it accumulate over your lifetime, do that rather than wait and then possibly get a better job and a better job and better job. And now you're making good money in retirement, could possibly be making more money than you were in your early years of life. So it's a journey, but it's a tax journey, and it takes some thought and some planning and some strategizing. So, but the question is, where do we think taxes are going to be in the decades to come? So for people that are still working, contributing to these accounts and deferring tax, does it make sense for you to be deferring the taxes? Do we think taxes are going to be higher in decades to come? For example, if you were in the, let's say, 20 to 24% tax bracket, is that is it possible that when you are 70 years old, the tax bracket could be 30% or higher? And if you are on the fence, on the side of the fence that says, yeah, we think taxes are going to go much higher as we age, then you might consider converting while you can stay in these lower tax brackets. We are at a historical low for income tax. If you search it up and you look at the charts over the last 100 years, historically, as they say, we're in a lower tax income tax bracket. Where that's going to go in the future, I don't know. But here's some food for thought. Is that a saying that you say, food for thought? I think so. So the future of income tax is anticipated to be shaped by various economic, social, and technological factors. And here's a few different views, okay? So we have a progressive taxation system. And what that means is, let's say that a person gets a job and they and now they're going to make $1,000 more the next year. So they get a raise, they're going to make $1,000 more per year. And that $1,000 has just put them up into the higher tax bracket, okay? So now they're in a higher tax bracket. It was, let's say, 24%. Now it's 30%. Well, because it's progressive, you don't just, their whole paycheck does not just get taxed at 30%. Only that extra $1,000 gets taxed at 30%. All the other money gets taxed at the previous rate. And think of it as a bucket system where when one bucket is full, so you fill the first bucket, which is the lowest tax rate, and then you fill the second bucket, which is the second highest rate, so it goes up a little bit. Then it pours over into the next bucket, and then it pours over. So it's kind of a pour-over concept, which is hard to illustrate over the radio, but you are not taxed. All of your money is not taxed at the exact same rate. It is broken up into different buckets based on, and then as you make more and more money, then eventually you might have some money that's in that higher bucket or even the highest bucket, okay? So when you make over a certain amount, you could be making $1 million a year, but you still are filling bucket number one and then bucket number two and so on. So everybody's part of that progressive system. There is a thought that they may expand that progressive tax system. So many argue for a more progressive income tax system where higher income tax brackets face increased rates. So this view is driven by the concern that over the concerns around income equality and the need for additional revenue to fund social programs or public services. So there might be another tier or another bucket. Maybe they add on buckets, but there could be an expansion of that. There's discussions around, and again, these are all discussions. I don't want to get political, but I'm letting you know what's on the table. Flat tax systems. So a flat tax system would propose the shift towards where all individuals pay the same percentage of their income regardless of their earnings. So that would be a flat tax. That's not what we have. We have progressive. But if we switch to a flat tax system, then everyone would pay the same rate, and then that would be that. So if you are making $1 billion or you make $20,000 a year, you pay the same percentage in taxes. Something else to think about. Well, okay, one of the arguments with that flat tax system is the simplicity of it. There is something to be said for simplicity, because taxes can be very confusing, misleading. People don't understand them. And when, especially when you're trying to do things like a Roth conversion or create some retirement strategy, taxes matter. Understanding taxes matter. And if your financial advisor isn't talking to you about taxes, then ask yourself, what kind of financial advisor do I have? Am I really getting the bang for my buck? Because it is a huge portion of retirement, you know, and taxes and retirement are more complex. They're more complicated because you have things like Social Security. Just the way Social Security is taxed is confusing. I do workshops on that alone. But okay, so anyways, the simplicity, I like me myself, I like efficient, I like simplicity. But again, I'm sure there was a really, really good argument of how we ended up with a progressive tax system in the first place. The next topic on the table for the future of tax income taxes specifically is the increased use of technology. So one discussion, I won't even say argument, but there talks about the advancements in technology. So think about how we collect taxes and then the reporting, all of that could become more automated. And then there could be moves towards real-time income tax assessments. So we don't have to, you know, think about how technology could impact how we pay taxes, how and when we're taxed, and how much, how more instamatic that could become and automated. There could be moves towards, like I said, the real-time income tax assessments, and the taxes are calculated and deducted right as your income is earned, and could possibly reduce the need for an annual tax filing. Like, you don't have to file your taxes every year. It just happens in real time, which I don't know that that would cause them to lower taxes, but could result in less work, right? With technology, again, replacing more people in the workforce, including those working for the IRS. Another topic is universal basic income implications. So there may be changes to how income tax is structured to fund these programs, which could involve a new tax mechanism or a reallocation of existing resources. But that's based off your universal basic income implications, which I'll be honest, I'm not a whole lot familiar with that, but it's on the table of discussions. And then the taxation of wealth. Tax the rich. We hear this all the time. So I'm very into philanthropy and giving and charities and all of the things. And I love going to these events. These are my I guess that's when I like to dress up and go. It's my dress up. This is my date nights. Is going to Tim and I like to go to all the events. But we're givers, you know, and we want to support all these charities, because there is such a need in the world, right? All of the different things, even just, you know, whether it's a natural disaster, and you have all of these emergencies, people displaced, and the need for homes and need roofs over their head, food on the table, kids to look after, and just all of these things that can happen. It's not just poverty, right? It's not just disabled. It's not just those things. It's not just single moms or people who are struggling. It is other things. It's such a widespread of, we were just talking today, I'm like, I learned a new evil today that I didn't even know existed. And it's like, there's so much need in the world. So to not be a giver, to not be have that charitable heart, and I'm going back to taxation of the wealth, I'm circling back to this topic because I've always said we need to inspire the rich, okay? The wealthy are humans. Okay. You could be, I have friends that are billionaires. I have friends that are multi-millionaires. I have friends that call me when their bills are due. So I love them all the same. And at the core, they are the same. People, human heart is, you know, God is in us. So when you have someone that has the money and the assets to do it, I think that we can come to them with those needs and seek help from that. We can inspire the rich to help the poor. And that's biblical. I mean, Jesus writes about it in the scripture about how important it is for a wealthy man to take care of his people, right? That work for him. Like, I can't quote the scripture. Maybe David can help me, but they have where, you know, you have the owner of the farm, I'll call it, because I'm a farm girl, but it's bad for him to be living this lavish life and then hit the people that work for him to be struggling and starving. So we don't want that. We don't want to encourage that in our society. But my point is, I see great light in a lot of people with a lot of assets. But again, I also see this big, big spread between what a CEO makes and what people working in the world make. For example, my sister-in-law, who is a widow now, she's 47. My brother passed this year, and she's been looking for a job. And it has been so disheartening to know that she's got great experience. She's a really hard worker and works in retail, has always worked in retail. But the amount of money that she was offered to be a regional manager over four stores in retail wasn't enough for her to pay her own way. I would still have to supplement income for her. And this is not just a mom and pop shop. I won't say the name because I don't want to bash anybody, but this is a huge, huge corporation that if I said their name, you know exactly who it is. And I just thought, wow, how could a company so profitable not pay their people enough to even get by? Because she is living a very, very, you know, low middle class lifestyle. So there's got to be better. And the reason I'm saying this is because I foresee change. I do foresee change in the future. I just have to, we just have to be prepared for it and make these decisions on our own. Oh, did you find it? He's bringing me the verse.
One of many.
Okay, Deuteronomy. Whoop, I lost the mic. Deuteronomy 15.
11 through, well, it's just verse 11.
Verse 11. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. Amen.
Amen.
See, those are the inspirations that we need. And you're seeing a lot of it as we're watching a lot more commentary, and the world of media is changing before our eyes. It's been really amazing to see how much media is evolving. And I'm so blessed and honored to be on the show and have the radio in a way to communicate. But when it comes to the taxation of wealth, I think we're going to see some change, whether it's going to be an inspirational change where we rely more on corporations and wealthy benefactors more than we rely on government support, or if we're going to see them, the wealthy, get taxed more. So I say there's the taxation of wealth is certainly a really hot topic and a big discussion, but we do need a people. Here's what I say. People that work hard for financial independence. So if you have an employee that works hard for you and your business, and this is for all my business owners, if you have an employee that works hard for you and they don't show up to work in order to go home and beg for help, right? That's where I draw the line. If someone is willing to work and they are working for financial independence and they deserve it. So before you buy something bigger and better, I inspire you and encourage you, take care of the people that work for you, because there comes a time when they say, I can't take this job. And that's what happened with my sister-in-law. She's still looking for the job because they missed out on an incredible opportunity to have a really loyal, dedicated worker because they just weren't willing to pay her enough, or maybe they found somebody else that was more desperate. But we're going to hold out and find the right job that pays her enough that she can be financially independent because she deserves that. She's a person that works hard, doesn't deserve to also have to beg. That's just my little message there. Regional and global tax policies. So that could get interesting. You know, we hear about global economies a lot more, you know, and global taxation could certainly impact our future in retirement. What are things going to be in decades to come, years to come? But so this is, as economies become more interconnected, there may be a trend towards coordinated tax policies across regions or countries to prevent tax evasion and ensure fair taxation of individuals and corporations, especially those with cross-border income. So we could see more global tax policies. And I would not be surprised. So another topic is tax credits and deductions reform. So the future may see a simplification of the tax code with a reduction in the number of credits and deductions available. So I know with the Trump tax code, there's a little more simplicity to it. The higher deduction I can't think of the word right now. But anyways, streamline the process and make tax liabilities more transparent. You know, I don't know if that'll ever happen, simply because the more confused people are, the more help they need. And there is a business in helping others. So sometimes I think that it's about that. Keeping people confused is a way to keep one particular industry going. So I love, again, simplicity. I don't think things have to be that complicated, but we have a tendency to overcomplicate things. Will the tax laws ever be simplified? I don't know. I'd probably vote no, just because I know that there's an underlying industry that wants to provide that service. So, and this is one of the last ones. Focus on environmental and social goals. Okay, there's big discussion around climate change, and there may be an increased emphasis on how tax policies can promote social justice and environmental sustainability. So how can taxes be a part of that discussion? And it's certainly on the table. This could manifest in tax incentives for green technologies or social programs aimed at reducing inequality. I mean, we're already seeing that. So These are just some futuristic discussions around taxes. For those of you thinking, okay, I'm sitting on this giant nest egg of money that I still owe income tax on. Do I pay the income tax now? Maybe you can get out of it in the 20%. You know, maybe you pay 22, 24%, whatever the tax rate is for you. Maybe you can pay that now and then convert to a Roth. And spend the rest of your working years allowing that money to grow tax-free. Is it worth it? This is not a blanket answer. There is no yes or no answer. This is a calculated mathematical equation that has to be done with a professional, okay? So only take this information as insight, knowledge, you know, generalized information. It's not specific to you. It is definitely not advice. So, but in talking about the future of taxation, I'll be honest, I can't sit here and say, oh, well, I think this is going to happen, because I don't lean one way or the other. I really don't. I have colleagues and, you know, people that affiliates of mine that really lean one way or the other. They're really passionate about it and their thoughts on it. And, but I also think that it gravitates towards different financial products too. You know, it's like, what are you selling? What are you into? And then that's where your passion can be. So you have to be careful with that as well. You don't want to let somebody come in and paint this gloomy outlook and just to kind of coerce you in a direction of a particular financial investment or product. So keep an open mind, do research. You know, it's easy to get information and really kind of create your own thoughts around what you think the future holds for your retirement years. Because you know, at the end of the day, you are the one who has to live out those plans. And no one is going to, I like to say nobody's coming, right? No one's coming. You need to be responsible for yourself and make sure that you are relying on your own thinking process to make these decisions. So I'm going to have a little sip of coffee and we're going to talk about Roth conversions. Okay, so this is the Mindy Molina Show. It is a live show. I'm here every day, 4 to 5. Well, every day, every Wednesday. Definitely not every day. Every Wednesday evening, I am in here in the studio discussing financial topics. So today I'm talking about Roth conversions, and we just went over taxes, if you're just tuning in, and the future of taxes. And again, you need to make your own choice on whether a Roth conversion is right for you. It is not a blanket answer, yes or no. This requires some mathematical approach. It takes some calculating to be able to determine that. So now, what are ways that you can, I want to go up here and let me get to my Roth conversion discussion. So there's a few, one of the things about a Roth conversion is what are you converting? It could be a 401k, could be 457b, could be a 403b, and could already be an IRA. These are different categories, but at the end of the day, they all mean the same thing. You still owe income tax on these accounts. So whenever you're going through these, let me get back down here. All right, when there's limits for Roth contributions, here's where I wanted to be. So, and conversions, there's different limits for Roth contributions and conversions. They differ based on various factors, including income levels and tax filing status. So whether you file single, married, filing jointly. But there's different factors, income being the main one too. So these limits, this is from a year or so ago, but just to give you an idea, you have an annual contribution limit. So individuals under the age of 50, okay, individuals can contribute up to a certain amount. It's been about $6,000-$7,000 per year, okay? In this particular year, which is in the past, it was $6,500 per year. That's how much one individual could contribute. Unless you are over the age of 50, you could contribute an additional $1,000. And for me, if you're over the age of 50 and you can only contribute an extra $1,000, that's not going to move the needle for an annual thing. If you could contribute $1,000 a month, maybe, but that's not going to really do much. So I've never understood that particular rule. There's income limits. So for a single filer, the ability to contribute to a Roth IRA begins to phase out at a modified adjusted gross income. So the MAGI, modified adjusted gross income on this particular year was $138,000, and it could be different now. So you have to check the income limits. But as you can see, that's a modest income. And then your ability to contribute to a Roth, okay? It's the ability to contribute phases out after you reach that income limit. And then it completely phases out if you're over the $153,000, which again, check for what those are this year. So as you can see, once you reach a certain threshold of income, they start backing off what you can contribute. And it's already very little. It's not like it's a huge amount. So, and then for married couples, it's the same concept, just a different threshold. So you're going to want to look those up, see what your income limit is for this year, and whether you file single or married filing jointly. Look it up specifically for you and figure out what is your income limit and are you over the threshold or are you under it? And then you can determine if you can actually make that contribution to your 401k. For a lot of you who are getting started investing, a Roth IRA is really advertised heavily. And I have younger people come to me who are just getting started and they say, oh, I've saved up, you know, $5,000. Should I put it in a Roth? And my answer is always no. because you see something on TikTok, you see something on Facebook or an ad, or you hear something. The Roth, the reason that you don't want to do a Roth with the first bit of money that you save, number one, you need an expense account, which is your checking. Number two, you need an emergency fund. Typically, the money that people want to put in a Roth is actually an emergency fund. And yet, advisors will put them in a Roth account at a young age, but they have to understand that once they put that money in there, they don't have access to it without a penalty until they get to 59 and a half, and who knows what that number will be once they reach that. So if you are in your 20s and you've saved up money, and now you, let's say you at this point you have $30,000 in a Roth and you want to go, you want to put money into a business that you're building, you're going to get penalized. Maybe you want to buy a house. Maybe you want to pay for your wedding. You're going to be penalized. You don't need to have your money in a Roth IRA right away. Do your emergency fund and remember the liquidity of that money. Is this money you might use before you get to retirement? Because there are certain needs that have to be met before you get to retirement, and they cost money. So make sure you're saving for the right thing. Okay, so those are the income limits. Let's talk about the conversion, because that's the number one topic that we're trying to get to here. So we've contributed, you know what your contributions are limited. But when you do a conversion, which is where you've contributed the money already into your 401k, okay? And the reason I was talking about the contributions into a Roth is because you can set it up to where a portion of your paycheck goes into a Roth 401k as well. Or you can do it, you know, when you on your own, just open an account. But the 401k, the taxes are deferred. So you don't pay your income taxes on that money. Now it's sitting in the 401k. You've accumulated all of this money in your 401k. Now you can convert that to a Roth IRA. But there are no income limits for converting a traditional IRA or 401k, like the regular 401k or IRA, to a Roth IRA. So what do people do when they are over the income limit? Well, they put all the money in the 401k, and then when the time is right, they just convert it to a Roth rather than contribute bit by bit, because they weren't allowed to do that. That's called a backdoor Roth. But the amount that you convert at that time, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem with that is you have to pay over the lump sum. And now you have to strategize of filling. Remember when we talked about the buckets, the progressive system? Well, let's say you have 2.5 buckets full of income. And that third bucket is only half full, but it's a fairly low tax rate. You might say to yourself, well, let's fill the rest of the bucket up at that tax rate with 401k money that we're going to convert to a Roth. So maybe it's $50,000, maybe it's $20,000 that year. You know, you take a distribution and you immediately dump it into the Roth. That's a Roth conversion. So now you do pay the income tax that year. You do. Typically, we just withhold it. You don't physically write a check. You just have it paid out of that lump sum of money, and you convert the balance to a Roth, and you put it in there, and you let it accumulate and grow tax-free. That's a Roth conversion. Now, what happens if you just do the whole thing at once? Let's say you have a $500,000 401k, and you say, well, I have bucket one and two full, and now you just do the whole lump sum. Well, now a portion of it is going to go in bucket three, and then you're also, it's going to spill, the rest of it will spill over into buckets four, five, maybe six. Those are higher taxes. So now you converted a small portion of it at a decent tax rate, but the rest of it you paid at the highest rate possible. So you don't want to do that. That's where the calculating and the math comes in, and the professionals come in. That's when this is where keeping our tax strategies complicated and complex keep people like me and a whole other industry of financial professionals in business, right? This is where our need comes in. So it would be great if it wasn't that complicated, but unfortunately it is. But you just have to do the calculating, and it is a mathematical system that, you know, this is what it's going to be, and you move on. But you want to do it in the right way, because you don't want to pay more in taxes filling those other buckets just to do it in like rip off the Band-Aid kind of approach. That is not the most tax efficient path. It's not. You don't have to get in a hurry with this. You just need to have a strategy, and every year you do your strategy. And I recommend people really get involved in this more in their 50s. You know, if you've been contributing to a 401k all this time, and if your income is not over the top threshold, you know, if you make $500,000 a year, then the conversation is not necessary. However, if you don't, if you make, you know, $100,000 a year or $80,000 a year, it is a good conversation, because we might can start converting and doing the calculating now and get you in a really good position in retirement where you don't have this tax lien. But again, it's about the calculating, but you don't want to wait until you're 70 to start this. This is something that you want to do at 50, 55. Okay. So these limits, all these rules are subject to change. Okay. So you always want to understand what the conversion limits are, what the contribution limits are, based on your age, based on how you file your taxes, and if there's been any updates or changes in the laws. But a lot of people do a backdoor Roth IRA. And that's a strategy used by people to try to circumvent these income limits, like I said. So they restrict your direct contributions to a Roth IRA if you make a certain amount of money. So then they use this method, particularly because it's beneficial for high income earners who want to take advantage of the tax-free growth. You know, if you have a money that's making, you know, if it doubles over your lifetime or over a few years, or you have a really good run up, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to owe any capital gains tax on that money? Those are big wins to not have to pay capital gains tax. So it's all about tax-free growth. It makes the growth of your account value that tax-free. And you have tax-free withdrawals. So when you get into retirement, one of the really awesome benefits of taking your income from a Roth account in retirement is that it's not going to impact other things like how your Social Security is taxed. So there's any distributions you take from a Roth IRA does not impact how your provisional, it's not part of the provisional income calculation that's used to determine how much of your Social Security is taxed, which can be a little bit confusing. So let me say it again. When you take distributions from a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA, when you take it from a Roth, that money that you take does not go into the equation to determine your provisional income, which is a calculation that determines whether or not, or if so, how much of your Social Security will be taxed. And that's a huge benefit, because the same person could be taking the exact same amount of income for that year. They could be earning the exact same amount of money in retirement, but yet 85% of their Social Security gets taxed. They have to pay taxes on that money that they earned, that they got from Social Security, where the other person who got the exact same amount of money for the year in income doesn't pay anything on Social Security tax. So again, these strategies, they have a ripple effect. The things that you do you take action, there's a reaction. Understanding how this is going to ripple out and how it's going to affect other things in your retirement financial household matters. So let's see. The benefits of, here are converting, high income earners have several opportunities to convert a portion of their 401k to a Roth IRA. Here are some typical strategies. So for high income earners, there's several opportunities to convert a portion of your 401k to a Roth IRA. One is in-service withdrawals. So some 401k plans, you have to check with your plan administrator, but some of these 401k plans will allow you to take what they call an in-service withdrawal while you're still working, while you're still employed. And if your plan allows that, then you can start to roll over a portion of your 401k to a Roth IRA. So we've done this many times. You have someone who's working. They know they're going to retire in 3 to 5 years. And they say, okay, this is my 401k. I'm now eligible for in-service withdrawals. That would allow them to take out while they're working, fill up that third bucket, like I said, in portions. Not the whole thing, but in portions. So we say, okay, you're going to retire in 5 years. So every year from here until then, we're going to convert $40,000 of your 401k. Every year in January, we do the conversion. Okay, now $40,000 is over here. Next thing you know, they've got, what would that be, $200,000. $200,000 of their 401k has now been converted at a good rate, tax rate. And from now on, that money will grow completely tax-free, which is huge. That is the Roth, that is the good, simple Roth conversion. That's kind of how it was, that's kind of how Roth conversions became popular. But I feel like a lot of people don't get around to it until they realize they're going to have to take the required minimum distributions. And by then, it's a little bit too late. So it's something that you want to get ahead of if you can. It's not always too late. Depends on your income. But again, like I said, this is a mathematical equation that's different for everybody. Another way, another strategy is after-tax contributions. If your 401k plan allows for after-tax contributions, you can contribute beyond the pre-tax contribution limit. You can then convert these after-tax contributions to a Roth IRA, possibly avoiding taxes on the conversion. But it's after-tax contributions. Okay, so the whole point of it is that these are contributions that you've already paid taxes on. So you're not making contributions into a 401k where you haven't paid income tax on that money. You're pushing it out or deferring it, as they say. This is actually after-tax contributions. And then you can convert that to a Roth just because it's considered non-qualified funds. You deposit it into a Roth and let it grow. And the growth would be tax-free. Separation from service. So if you leave your job, you may have the option to roll over your 401k balance to a Roth IRA directly. So you could do a rollover. And this can be a good opportunity to convert pre-tax funds to Roth funds, especially if you're not working and you're not receiving any income. This could be an opportunity to convert, you know, if you have a gap in your wages, maybe you get laid off, maybe there's a recession, things are going on, that's when you could fill up buckets 1, 2, and 3 with your 401k amounts and pay the taxes on them that year that your income is low. If you ever have a year where your income is really low, that's when you should certainly look into converting. Even if you don't have to spend the money, maybe you don't need the money, but you just do the conversion. You move it from one account to the other and you let them withhold the taxes and then it's all converted. But separation from service does free up your ability to do rollovers. Strategic timing. I like this one. So converting during years when your income may be lower. Didn't I just say that? Such as during a sabbatical, early retirement, or when you have other deductions that can offset the tax impact of a conversion. So this is a good one too. If for some reason you have a large deduction that can offset those income tax, maybe you have a loss of a business or something like that, you can offset those income taxes that you owe and let that kind of be absorbed in that loss and convert that way. But it's all about, it has to be strategic, it has to be mathematical and progressive with that progressive tax system. It has to match up, and you really have to know how to calculate it, which, believe it or not, it's much easier and much simpler than it may sound, because it's a waterfall approach. Once you get the bucket, you know, full, that you don't want to pay taxes at any higher than, let's say it's 25%. You say, I want to fill it up to 25% every year. Other than that, let's wait and I'll deal with it in retirement when my income is lower. So, okay, another one, utilizing the standard deduction. So that was the word I was looking for earlier in the show, standard deduction. So a higher standard deduction makes it easier, because a lot of people in retirement now they don't really use write-offs, because the standard deduction is big enough that it offsets that, which makes taxes much simpler. So if your taxable income is low enough, you might convert a portion of your 401k to a Roth IRA without any tax because of the standard deduction. So there are people that live in retirement that have very low income and they have a very low expenses. There's certain people out there that don't really spend that much money in retirement. And then there are some that do. It just, if you are in a lower income and you do have a 401k or an IRA, and you know, maybe even if it's only $10,000 a year, it's still tax-free conversion just by using the standard deduction. So you might be able to convert it tax-free. Even if you only do a few $1,000s a year, why not? So utilizing the standard deduction could be but that, again, that's for low-income earners. Tax bracket management. High income earners can strategically convert amounts that keep them within a lower tax bracket, thus minimizing the overall tax impact of the conversion. Remember, it is progressive. I can't say that enough. So when you talk about tax brackets, that's what I'm calling buckets. Okay. So each tax bracket has its own amount of money that goes in that bucket or bracket, whatever you want to call it, bucket or bracket. I didn't realize they sound so much the same. But you're filling those buckets within each bracket that has its own rate, okay? So you could strategize on filling those buckets and then stopping and waiting until next year and then filling them again and stopping and just trying to convert as much as you can at the lowest rate that you can. And even if you don't end up converting the whole thing before retirement, which typically is what happens, it's not always that you end up converting the whole thing, but a good portion of it you're able to convert. And then when you retire, you know, you have a smaller tax lien than you did if you hadn't have done it. The Roth 401k option, this has become very popular. A lot of people are contributing to the Roth 401k. So if your employer offers a Roth 401k option, then you can contribute directly to that account, allowing for tax-free growth and then withdrawals in retirement. So take advantage of that. If you call your employer, call your plan sponsor, find out, do I have a Roth 401k option? How much can I contribute? Max it out every year. And take advantage of that. And you can even do that before you contribute to the regular 401k. Hopefully you can do both. But definitely take advantage if you have that Roth 401k option. But listen, before pursuing any conversion strategy, I cannot express this enough. It's really, really important that you consult with a financial advisor or a tax professional that's going to assess your specific situation, your particular account values, income values, tax margins or tax brackets, and that's going to understand. You need somebody that understands this stuff and understands the tax implications, and that will develop a plan with you that aligns with your long-term retirement goals. I have people that come in my office all the time who say, and they're with large institutions that get zero help when it comes to this stuff. And they might have, you know, $1.5 to $2 million in IRA funds, and these advisors are managing this money for them, but that's it. They're not helping them make wise, strategized decisions, and instead they just miss opportunities to build generational wealth. And instead, you work all these years, and now this money is going to the government. And then that money ends up who knows where, okay? Because it's not going to benefit your grandchildren. It's not going to benefit your kids or your great-grandchildren. And this is the legacy that God gave you. This is your family. You know, you could have all of these people in your life, but God gave you these few. And he's counting on you to build a legacy for them. And used to have the importance of, and I always love the verse about honoring your mother and father. And I think there's a lot packed in that verse, because it's so that your days may be long on like the land I've provided. David will come back in and find the verse for me again. But I'll find it. The fifth commandment. I want to quote it, because I think it is, honor your mother and your father, or honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. I think there's a lot packed in there. One of the things that I think is that if any of you have read my book, I have a whole chapter on this, but I think a downfall, or one of Satan's little tricks, I'll call it, is that he wants children to seek affirmation from their parents, right? Like, I want my mom and dad to say how proud they are of me. I want my dad to say, oh, I picked the right guy, or he's so proud of my job, and he's proud of, you know, and oh, Mindy, you're amazing. You do all these wonderful things. That's me getting affirmation from my dad. And or my mom. But that's not what this is saying. That's the opposite. I should be affirming my parents with gratitude and pride and honor, right? I should be saying that, I should be affirming to them, thank you. You did it. You did all you could. You did a good job. Look at who I am because of you. Good, right, or bad, the ugly, all of it, you know, comes in. These are the people that gave us life. Honoring that legacy, looking up to and giving honor, makes it so much easier for our parents to feel good about building generational wealth, because I think Satan wants generational wealth to be done away with for Christians. You know, the poorer we become, the less powerful we are in this world. And what better way to do it than to just eradicate generational wealth? And these IRAs are an incredible tool for that. You have this huge IRA that the government is going to get a good portion of, depending. Because here's what happens when your kids inherit an IRA. It goes, so for me, example, I'm a hard worker. I'm successful enough. I have enough in income that if my parents leave me anything that is an IRA, it is going to get taxed at the highest tax bracket, which might be what, I think it's 37% right now. That's really close to half. And that's not what they saved up for. So if they don't do the right kind of planning, when I inherit this money, the government is going to get a large portion of it. And that's where coming in and saying, hey, I'm not okay with that. I want this money to go to my legacy, to be part of that your days may be long in the land that the Lord God is giving you. Maybe it's land. I think that word could be, but I think of land as legacy. What God is giving us is legacy. What is it we call an estate, right? So people, building an estate for your family is just so crucial. And I'm such a promoter of that. I think you hear me talk about it quite a bit, but it's because I think that's spiritual warfare. It's my message. It's my part of my ministry, certainly, that God's put on my heart that, hey, as Christians, we have to build generational wealth, because my children have to have power in this world, and I'm building their spiritual power, but they need financial power, right, to fight against the enemy too. So how much time do we have? few more minutes?
2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes. Okay, good. So,
oh, two and a half.
I never know. Sometimes I ramble on. I don't know if he's getting ready to cut me off. But with a Roth IRA, the good thing about that is, guess what? If your children inherit a Roth IRA, it goes straight to them. It is not, there's no capital gains tax. There's no income tax. So if my parents leave me a Roth IRA instead, it's not going to get taxed at that highest tax bracket. Life insurance, tax-free, right? So there's a lot of different strategies, and we've been talking about the, if you listened to the show last time, it was all about all these different ways and strategies and tools. And I'm going to tell you, it doesn't matter if you have, you know, a $50,000 401k or if you have $5 million in IRA funds, because I've seen households with tons of money in IRAs, and it's important that you have the right strategy in place. And there are ways to do it that make it amazing for you, for your family, and for your legacy, for your grandchildren and your grandchildren's children and your great-grandchildren's children, and not Uncle Sam. And then you can let your legacy decide where the money that you worked so hard for, how it gets spent in this world. So this is the Mindy Molina Show. I appreciate you tuning in. I hope you'll come back next week, Wednesday, 4 to 5, WCNO 89.9 FM. You can find me online at mindymolina.com. Happy to help. Just give me a call. Whether you're online, we do a lot of Zooms, or you can meet in my office. Thank you. And remember, God loves you, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com. Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
Empty hands, lay down your cares again, let go of all you think you can't. Hear more than fear is out, feel more than all your doubt, see more than where you are right now.